This is the Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad Network.
Hello, and welcome to Bodies of Horror, the podcast where we look at all of our favorite horror films from the classic, the camp, to the cringe, through the lens of disability. I am your host, Nicole, and I am thrilled to have you here. So, what is on the examination table for this episode? We're going to be taking a look at 2014's Under the Skin, directed by Jonathan Glazer and starring Scarlett Johansson. This seems like a very timely episode, because Jonathan Glazer just won an Oscar for The Zone of Interest, and he and Scarlett Johansson just collabed on a Prada ad. So stars seem to kind of align for this one, so very excited to delve into this sci-fi, but definitely sci-fi with lots of, I think, some horrific imagery and kind of ideas at play. So, yeah, let's dig into it and let's talk about Under the Skin. Of course, to start this, we have to go to our friend Wikipedia for that plot synopsis. In Glasgow, a motorcyclist retrieves an inert young woman from the roadside and places her in the back of a van, where a naked woman dons her clothes. After buying clothes and cosmetics at a shopping center, the woman drives a van from town to town, picking up men. She lures a man into a dilapidated house. As he undresses, he follows the woman into a void, seemingly unaware of his surroundings, and is submerged in a liquid abyss. At a beach, the woman attempts to pick up a swimmer, but she is interrupted by the cries of a drowning couple attempting to rescue their dog as it is pulled out to sea. Swimmer rescues the husband, but the husband rushes back into the water to save his wife, and both drown. As the swimmer lies exhausted on the beach, the woman strikes his head with a rock, and she drags him to the van, driving away and ignoring the couple's distraught baby. Later that night, the motorcyclist retrieves the swimmer's belongings and tent, ignoring the baby, who is still on the beach. The woman visits a nightclub and picks up another man. At the house, he follows her into the void and is submerged in the liquid. Suspended beneath the surface, he sees the swimmer floating naked beside him, alive, but bloated and almost immobile. When he reaches to touch him, the swimmer's body collapses, leaving only his skin. A red mass empties through a trough. The next day, the woman receives a rose from a street vendor purchased by another man in traffic. She listens to a radio report about the missing family from the beach. The woman enters a dark room and is examined by the motorcyclist. She seduces a lonely man with facial tumors, but lets him leave after examining herself in the mirror. The motorcyclist intercepts the man and bundles him into a car, then sets out in pursuit of the woman with three other motorcyclists. In the Scottish Highlands, the woman abandons the van in the fog. She walks to a restaurant and attempts to eat cake, but retches and spits it out. In a bus, she meets a man who offers to help her. At his house, he prepares a meal for her, and they watch television. Alone in her room, she examines her body in the mirror. They visit a ruined castle, where the man carries her over a puddle and helps her down some steps. At his house, they kiss and begin to have sex, but the woman stops and examines her genitals. Wandering in a forest, the woman meets a commercial logger and shelters in a bothy. She awakens as the logger is molesting her. She runs into the wilderness, but he catches and attempts to rape her. During the struggle, he tears her skin, revealing a black, featureless body. The man panics and flees. She holds her peeled-off face in her hands, while it still moves and blinks at her. As the woman extricates herself from her skin, the man returns and douses her in fuel and burns her alive. Elsewhere, the motorcyclist stands on a mountaintop alone and looks out across a snowy field. The woman's smoldering remains are shown as her ashes rise up in smoke and slowly descend to the ground. This is absolutely a film that I think a plot description really doesn't do justice to just what the experience is in watching it. The visuals that you're seeing and the sound is absolutely incredible. The score is so, so, so good. And I believe that the score was done by Mika Levi, or Micah Levi. It's absolutely astounding, and I really love Jonathan Glazer's work. In addition to this film and The Zone of Interest, he's also known for Birth. This is not someone who is a prolific director by any means. He's not someone who's cranking out different films, on a pretty steady schedule of every, couple of years. He takes very long, decades break, to kind of put something together. And he talks about that a lot in interviews, how, people will say, well, what have you been up to in the last 10 years since your last film came out? And he's like, well, I've been working on this film. So this is someone who really crafts movies and is very thoughtful about how things are constructed within the world of his film. Now, this is adapted from a 2000 novel by Michael Faber, but my understanding, and I haven't read it, and I really wanted to read it in advance of this, but my bookshelf is quite full. But my understanding, based on what I was able to kind of suss out from this and doing a little bit of research and reading, listening to bits of the audiobook here and there, my understanding is that this is a very loose adaptation, so it's definitely not something that follows the text exactly. But the general idea is there about, an alien being that has come to Earth and is chasing after men. My understanding is that where some of the bigger pieces change, pieces that I will, kind of dig into here, is that she seems to go after, in the book, men of a specific build. She likes muscular men. And so she's seeking them out. Another thing that I found was really interesting was that being within kind of the body of a human female seemed to pain and be discomfort to the alien. It wasn't a pleasurable experience. We don't really explore that in the film, like the alien really being uncomfortable kind of in this flesh. So I found that really interesting, but I can see with how both this film is so interesting because it's both very kind of simple in its approach, but thus you end up with something very complex. It's like a very well-crafted meal, and that even if it doesn't have 1,000 different ingredients, the way that these ingredients come together are absolutely perfection. And I just love it so much. I guess where I want to talk about this film or start is the experience of the alien. So the film kicks off and we hear Scarlett Johansson, only known as the woman, but in the book, the alien has a name, and we hear her reciting some words. And in reading a number of different interviews with Jonathan Glazer, he talked about how specific this was. Again, just speaking to how masterful I really find him. He talked about how he had walked in while Scarlett was rehearsing and trying to find kind of this accent. Just like the book, this film takes place in Scotland. And so she was practicing, the accent, getting it down, and he recorded some of her work there. And so you have her speaking a number of different words. I think she's using a practice that breaks down words in a really phonetic way to help nail an accent. And it's such a brilliant way to start and a perfect way to kick off this film because this is an alien really trying to find that not just an accent, but a human accent, trying to really embody a human. And so he made that connection. And for me, one of the things in reading that and watching the film again, so much of what this alien is going through to me speaks to kind of an experience of masking. And I think I talked a little bit about the act of masking when speaking specifically about autism. But it's this idea, but I think it's more of a generalized thing as well. And it's kind of this, we want to assimilate, we want to fit in, and so we hide more apparent bits of our disability or kind of these presentations of our disabilities so that we can fit in specifically in certain moments. If we're around new people, if we're in a different setting and we're not sure how people are going to react, masking is something that some of us really kind of click into. Now it's a difficult thing, and I'll speak a little bit more on this specific idea in a bit, but we're really talking about an invisible disability, and masking really being something that can happen there. As someone with a physical disability, that is really hard to not have be very physically apparent. Masking doesn't necessarily work in that way, but for certain things it does. So it's just a really complex idea. But just this idea that this alien is on this journey of trying to fit in to society in certain ways, but not really doing a good job. And I think of the nightclub scene in particular is very kind of awkward because she can't really dance. And it's just, she just wants to get home and get the man kind of submerged. That's her job. And so just starting off the film with that kind of meta moment with Scarlett going through, hearing Scarlett go through certain words to nail that accent just really colored the film for me as I was watching it on this most recent rewatch. It's really, really, really cool. The plot synopsis says we're treated to a very interesting open in that we see a woman that is dead, seems lifeless. This motorcyclist, the main motorcyclist, because there's mentions and we see others. His role is really interesting because he both seems to be a threat, which is why I think the character is credited as the bad man, but seems to also be kind of working in cahoots with the alien, with, doing some cleanup. You see this with the campsite when the swimmer gets taken by the alien. And so I find that very, very, very interesting. And it should be noted that none of the characters, or I think maybe one does. I'm drawing just a main blank, but I think only one character possibly is given a name. The rest of the characters are not given a name at all and are credited based on just who they kind of represent and who they are within the film. So, you've got like first victim, you've got the Batman, which is the main motorcyclist, etc. I mentioned kind of working in cahoots. because there is one scene where I think that possibly he might be in the room with Scarlett Johansson's alien character when she's seducing a man. And I'll mention that when I get to that moment. But one thing about this film, I think, in terms of just how it's exploring humanity and this idea, in all, I read a number of different pieces, and I'll link a couple in the show notes. I'm not going to pull like a ton very specifically from them, just because I felt like a lot of it seemed pretty, I don't want to say surface level, because that sounds very derogatory, but it just seemed very kind of like, yeah, totally, yep, that was kind of the idea I was going with. And a very kind of straightforward read. But one thing that stood out to me, just based on some of these readings and also some interviews from Jonathan Glazer, was this exploration of humanity and empathy, and how the story that he was creating and adapting from the novel was really a meditation on this alien being tapping into their humanity. And it makes perfect sense. But we see different moments within the film where he is struggling with the, I think kind of her alien impulses and her, I have to fit in. This is weird. What am I doing? I don't know. It's so fascinating. But again, I it's that idea of masking to me. And when we talk about specifically individuals that may have some communication issues, again, looking at autism spectrum disorder, as an example of this, kind of a flat effect, or people say, oh, well, the emotional read of someone that has an autism diagnosis is going to be different. It's hard to read their emotions. They don't read emotions well. I don't think that that's necessarily true. As I always say, disability isn't a monolith, and you can't really lock people into, specific presentations or symptoms of a disorder or a disability, whatever the case may be. And I don't know. Things like that, I have some feelings on. But I couldn't help but be struck by this, especially on this watch, and really honing in on, kind of a disability specific read. Just an individual that seems a little kind of out of sorts in a world that isn't suited for them. And it's just a really just kind of general fascinating lens to really lock into for this film. And in the pieces that I read, they did kind of mention some of that. And of course, again, Jonathan mentioned, I think, in a number of different interviews about really wanting to explore empathy and how this alien creature being finds that empathy through their encounters with these men. And it should be noted that these men, outside of what happens to the alien at the end, which is the ending of this film, is really pretty harrowing. But the men that she encounters and that she's interacting with aren't bad men at all. They seem very, very nice, and they're excited to talk to her. I mean, Scarlett Johansson, she's gorgeous, and they're really kind of smitten by her, but they're very respectful and nice. And I don't know. It's it's a very interesting place to kind of approach it as well, because it forces you to really examine and think about what this alien is doing, why they may be doing it, what it means and represents, because there isn't just a straightforward, she's attacking these people that are attacking her, or she's just this master predator. There is a meaning to it. Especially in the book, it talks about like this is food. Like it's hunting, it's food for them, which is why I in the book, the alien is going after I think men of like a specific build or like of a muscular frame, because that's the kind of food that's preferred. And you could read into that a number of different things. But taking having her interactions with these men be very positive and being very helpful and kind and kind of shy, like I said, up until the end, is just kind of puts you in a whole different mindset with these interactions. I didn't mention this at the top and kind of giving a little bit of the background of the film, but this film was shot in a very kind of guerrilla style, where the men who are in the film, who are as the aliens' victims, essentially, they these were not actors. These were just random folks that were approached to do these scenes, and if they agreed, they would find sign a release. And so these aren't actors, and I think that gives just a very earnest kind of back and forth. A lot of their dialogue was improvised, which I'll also talk about when I talk about one of the men in particular. So, I don't know. It's something that really, I think, just makes this such an interesting and thought-provoking watch, is that you have these interactions that are happening that have just layer upon layer upon layer of different meanings, depending on kind of what viewpoint you want to kind of shift to. Before I dig into the scenes with the deformed man, I want to talk about the ending. Like I said, the ending to me is really harrowing. I remember when I first watched this, I saw this in theaters, and I actually saw this film. I have a very clear recollection of the whole circumstance of seeing this in the theater. I was going through an amazingly bad day. Went for a walk and just found myself kind of at a theater. I wasn't planning on necessarily going to a movie, but was feeling awful and I've been crying and walking around, just kind of being a mess. And, I went in and saw this film and loved it. And then, of course, it makes you think about, well, what were other people seeing as I was, walking around this park and sobbing, because I'm having this terrible time, or I don't know. It's very interesting, but the ending really stuck with me. We see the alien attacked, and brutalized by this man, and the man is going to rape the alien, but as he's pulling off the clothes, he pulls a chunk of the skin on her back, and I think the back of her neck, and you see the black underneath, basically her true alien form. And so the man darts off, and she gets up and she starts, kind of retreating into the woods, and she begins to pull down and pull back her skin. And yeah, there is the shot of her holding her face, and it's stunning. It is absolutely stunning, and it is just a real moment of just kind of shock, because it's this idea, I think, of this alien who has gone through these experiences and is now experiencing empathy, having kind of what I would think of as this disassociated experience in some ways. Seeing the face that she was wearing and reconciling like the harm and the experiences that have come to her, and that, you know, is there a separation of like, well, this happened to them and not to me? I don't know. It's just so fascinating. I can go into like these pockets with this film forever. But having her burned, having the man come back with fuel, lighting this alien on fire, and seeing the kind of the full kind of scope of that is intense. I don't know. I don't know why, just watching it this time really hit me even harder than what I recall, you know, on other rewatches. There was just something that was so profound to me, with the end. But that's really just taking a look, I think, at specifically the alien character and just some of the different ways that I was connecting it to kind of a disability experience. You know, this alien's experience to a disability experience in some pretty, I think, general and broad ways. But I want to talk about the deformed man. So one of the men that the alien picks up is the deformed man, and is a man that has tumors all over his face. And he is walking, he has a hoodie on. He sees him, it's dark out. And she does kind of her standard looking for directions. I'm lost. Can you show me? Can you tell me how to get here? Here. And she says, oh, she's asking him where he's going. And, oh, well, if this is on the way, I can give you a lift. It's kind of her way of getting the men into the van with her. And so he seems very hesitant in a way that I think the other men weren't. The other men were kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. Really appreciate the ride. And he does, but there's just something that seems really hesitant with him. Like he doesn't want to get into a car, and I think it speaks to a line that he has later in their conversation. So as she's driving, having this conversation, she's asking about his, just kind of asking about him and his life and his experiences. And it's really interesting because I think more than one man, I don't know if every man does this because they're not all wearing like hats or whatever, but there's this moment where I know at least a couple of the men will take off like a, you know, a hat or something that's kind of covering them, and the alien will make a reference like, oh, that's better, right? That's better, isn't it? And when he takes off his hoodie, the deformed man, and you can kind of see now that this is a man that has tumors all over his face. She says the same thing, and they have a conversation. She asks why he's going grocery shopping at night, and he says, well, people wind me up in the store. They look at me. They probably say things. I can imagine. And so going to the store at night, probably fewer people there and less likelihood that you're going to have too many problems is what he's alluding to. And she has some conversation with him about that. And, you know, so many of the reviews, and I think the point of this character in particular is to show kind of this shift in the alien to where it's less of a predator, like, the shift from being simply a predator and going after these men as kind of a food source to now tapping into that sense of humanity and sharing, you know, learning about people and sharing, being in a moment with people. And so, you know, the questions that the alien is asking seem much more pointed and more authentic in some ways. It's less performative. Although I will say that Scarlett Johansson does a phenomenal job in this role, in that when the alien is having these conversations and getting these guys to go back to where she takes them, it isn't performative. It does feel very authentic in some way. Perhaps a little stilted in terms of like, all right, you are having this conversation with me, but I know it's because you just want me to get home with you. You know, this is, you're playing at a means to an end here. And there's probably a, you know, guys are probably looking at it that way, like, oh, this girl's really into me, and, you know, you can have this conversation with her, and we'll just see where it goes. And but the conversation that she's having with the deformed man is different. It's very touching, and she's asking about, you know, his life, and she asks him about a girlfriend. Now, this starts off very similar to the way that she talks to these other men about, you know, if they have a girlfriend or friends, because she specifically zeroes in on people that she sees are alone, on these men that she sees by themselves. She's not looking for a man that's surrounded by lots of people. And in fact, there's a handful of times in the film where she'll encounter a man, or, you know, maybe start the initial, like, going to walk up to them and approach them or engage them in some way to, you know, kind of essentially get them for food. But she stops because there's someone there. They have friends. They're going somewhere. Someone's expecting them. And I think she doesn't want to raise a lot of suspicion. So she kind of leaves them be. And it's a little bit that way with the man that she sees at the nightclub. She starts to see, she sees that he's walking alone. She zeroes in on him. He goes into, like, this big nightclub. She's gonna go turn around to this pack of women, find her and basically, like, carry her into the club with them. It's a little bit funny, actually. And she, you know, once she's in, she's kind of separated, and she sees that the man is separated too. But, with the deformed man, they, you know, she's asking about girlfriend, when he's had a girlfriend, and he says he's never had a girlfriend. And she, you know, has him touch her because he's never touched a woman. And she says that she likes his hands. And, it's a really kind of beautiful moment, in conversation when she does get him to go back with her. In the other scenes where we've seen men kind of lure into kind of this goo, it's a very interesting, visual for how these men are basically captured. She gets them into, like, this void room. It's a, I think it could be any space, but it's, you know, they're probably seeing a bedroom or a room of some kind. And we just see kind of, like, this empty space. And there's, like, this black floor. And Scarlett's walking on it. And then as the men go, they sink into it. It's goo. Swallows them up. And when we've seen her with other men, she undresses a little bit. She progressively has to undress a little bit more, something I noticed in this rewatch. To the point where I think it's with the deformed man that she actually, I want to say she might be fully nude here. Or it could be just slightly later. But, she is undressing, but instead of just walking, like, basically well in advance of the person and luring them to her, she kind of walks with him and is like, come to me, come with me. And there's just something very sweet about it. What's going to happen to him is horrible, but it's very sweet. And so the scene ends. We don't see him, like, fully submerged or dead. We just see her leave the room, go down some stairs, and she sees herself in the mirror. And that's when we realize that she has saved this man, and she lets him go. And he's later captured by the motorcyclist and killed. It's a turning point, as I think any review will point out, and I think is very specific with how this film is structured and how the story is told. Because we're now seeing this alien make that shift from predator to a more empathetic and human kind of interaction with this man. And now I think as we see her in kind of the final end of the film going forward, she seems to approach interactions and just things in a lot different way. She seems much more vulnerable. She seems much more scared. And just, I don't know, there's just a different vibe to it. It feels like something has kind of changed. And so, it's a very, I think, profound thing. And, big ups to the guys who are in this film as the victims, because they do go fully nude, which again, I'm sure, just being some random person saying, "Hey, how would you like to be nude with Scarlett Johansson?" It's probably an experience in and of itself that I just can't imagine. So, but I want to talk about now, having gone through the scene, it's really heartbreaking, kind of her interactions with him. Again, this idea of this man living this kind of really difficult life, like having to go shopping at a certain time of day, structuring your life that way just because of how awful people can be to you, is so rough. And he just seems sad and defeated by having to live this way. And you can kind of see that the alien is sensing this, and I think has that connection. But as I mentioned, the men in this film that play these victims are just random people. They're not actors. They're random people that were found on the streets and signed a release warrant, essentially. But the man who plays the deformed man is a little different, a little less random. So, who is this man? Well, this man is Adam Pearson, and he is someone with the condition neurofibromatosis, and I believe it's neurofibromatosis 1 because there are different types. And he is from London and was diagnosed with his condition at the age of 5. What happened was he had bumped his head and the bump never went down. And so he was a twin. He is a twin. He has a brother, Neil. And so, his parents took him to the doctor when this bump on his head didn't go down. And he was diagnosed with neurofibromatosis. And so was his twin brother. But what's interesting about this is that they both have neurofibromatosis 1, but the way that it presents for both of them is wildly different. Obviously, for Adam, it presents in very visible tumors on his face and also on other parts of his body. He, in an interview with The Guardian that I'll link, he very funnily, he's really funny actually in interviews and on social media too. So, and he's got quite a career with the BBC in terms of being like a presenter and a host and doing some television specials that focus specifically on disability representation and things like that. So, this is someone who has, I think, a very kind of cool sophistication to them with how they talk about their experiences, but he someone had mentioned, was asking him about his disability, and he's like, "Yeah, I have all these tumors." He's like, "Yeah, I also have one on my ass, but I'm not going to show you that one." So he's very funny. But his brother, the way that it presents for him is, I think it mentioned a little bit of memory loss and I think some pain. And if I'm recalling correctly, I think some other kind of side effects more associated with things like epilepsy. But I could be mistaken in that. But again, this just goes back to this idea that two individuals, twin brothers, with the same condition, having wildly different experiences with how their disability impacts them in a day-to-day. So they were the subject of a documentary on the BBC. So very, very fascinating kind of background with that, and really fascinating too. In one of the articles I'll link, I don't know if it's The Guardian or if there was another thing I was looking through that had some childhood photos of Adam and his brother. And, his mom shares a story about how when they were younger, she got them confused. I think she talks about one specific example where she was feeding them when they were very young, and she confused the two of them. They looked very, very, very similar. So, yeah, it's just it's very interesting. More recently, Adam has gone on to be in some other things. He was in I think a film in 2018 with Jess Wexler, who was in Teeth that I covered on a previous episode, a film called Chained for Life. It came out in 2018, and it's about this actress played by Jess Wexler who forms this connection with her co-star, played by Adam. And Adam is also starring in the upcoming film A Different Man, starring Sebastian Stan, about a man that undergoes a facial reconstructive procedure, and the man becomes fixated on an actor in stage production based on his former life. So Sebastian Stan plays a man that has the condition that Adam has, neurofibromatosis, undergoes cosmetic or reconstructive surgeries, and looks like Sebastian Stan now, but becomes fixated on a character played by Adam that is doing like a play based on Sebastian Stan's life prior to his reconstructive surgery. It's very interesting. There were some photos that were released of Sebastian Stan in prosthetics, and a lot of people were upset that he was just basically playing a character with a condition. But as more details of the film came out, I think people I think understood some of the nuances of kind of what this role was. And of course, Adam, in a way that only Adam can, really came to the defense and was like, "Hey, I actually have this condition. I'm in this film. This isn't someone taking a role from me. So check that." And it's very interesting. So it's one of those things, and I've talked about this before. There seems to be this excuse that a lot of filmmakers will go to, and I say filmmakers because I'm also talking about, I think, also bringing in some of the screenwriters. Like when you're putting together these stories of someone's life, someone with a disability, particularly someone that had a disability that may be presented later in life, either they acquired the disability later in life or the symptoms, etc., kind of manifested later in life. Thinking about like biopics, like The Theory of Everything, things like that, where an able-bodied actor is cast because they're like, well, we're portraying the person before the disability, and so we're going to have this character, quote unquote, trip up in, these portions of the film to show the condition. And I feel like that's I don't know, To me, that feels just very uninspired. Not to say offensive, but just uninspired. Like, yeah, have a different kind of take on the story. Have someone with a disability in the story. Figure out like how that like challenge yourself with how you can actually have a different perspective and say something that's unique as opposed to this was this person's life and this is their life before X happened or before they were diagnosed with X. I don't know. It's just, to me, it feels very sloppy. I'm not a big fan of that approach anymore. Never really have been. But I could kind of see where people were coming from at first. But, I think having this be a very different kind of story and Adam saying, hey, I'm in this film, I think is very interesting. I think it's kind of cool. I'm going to check it out. It's listed as a thriller, so I'm anxious to kind of see how it goes. I know it's premiered at a couple of places, so I'm looking forward to it. I'll see. This could definitely be an episode to follow, but I just love seeing Adam, in stuff and getting this work because I think he's incredibly talented. His role in Under the Skin is really, really great, and it was his first kind of feature role here. So I think it's incredible. I think he does incredible work in this film. I just think he's a really interesting person, and I love that so much of what he has done in his work with the BBC especially has been around kind of disability advocacy and awareness, specifically for folks who have facial recognitions. So this gets back, now we're looping back to where I was originally starting this kind of tangent, if you will, which is how he got involved with his film. So he graduated college, he was working for BBC, and at some point, and I want to say it was maybe when he was in college or right after, he had reached out to this organization called Changing Faces in the UK. Changing Faces is an organization that provides supports and services for people with visible differences. So things like cleft palates, more extensive types of scarring, neurofibromatosis like Adam. And so he had reached out to them, got connected, was receiving supports in the Guardian article that I'll link, he talked about like not telling his family that he had reached out to this organization for support, which I thought was really interesting. But so Changing Faces had reached out to Adam because the I think maybe it was Jonathan Glazer himself or the film company had reached out to Changing Faces to say, this is it, we're casting this role. We'd really like to, work with you guys to see if we can find someone who would kind of fit in what we're looking for. And they sent an email to Adam to see if he would be interested. And he took them up on it. And the rest is kind of history. And he had, I think, a really, really great experience. He talked about improvising with Scarlett and, in particular, when they're having the conversation, right when he's, going to touch her on her face and neck, she mentions that he has lovely hands. And he said that that was something that they had kind of worked together because that was something that his mom has said that she really liked his hands. And so it was a really kind of profound thing for him. And I really love that. And again, I think it just speaks to his passion of really putting a lot of heart, a lot of meaning to the role and in his work. So just really excited to see him kind of flourishing. And yeah, I mean, I'm gonna see a different man and I will see anything with Adam in it. I think he's shown the goods. Literally, he's shown the goods too, because he is nude in this. Which again, that's got to be wild. Just to, and he shares a little bit about that too, to, be naked, kind of in the presence of Scarlett Johansson. So I don't know. I recommend reading the article and also watching the docs. If you have access to BBC, the documentary about his life and his work on like the Undateables and a couple of other TV projects that he's done, I think he's just really incredible and well worth it to kind of give a view. When you have When we're able to talk about a disabled actor that has not only, been in things that we can talk about, but has really connected their work with advocacy and awareness, I think that's so cool and really important. Goes back to, when I talked about Warwick Davis and his work of, from a very early point in his career, wanting to really facilitate opportunities for other disabled actors. And so to put a visibility and highlight the experiences of folks with disabilities and that really being kind of a fuel for really both men, I think is so interesting, and I do love that very much. So yeah, I've talked a lot about this film. I feel like this is such a random episode because this is a really difficult film to really talk about in a specific way. There's just a lot going on with it. It's stunning. Again, the score, the visuals, there's some really beautiful and haunting imagery. I've been kind of like ruminating on the score, just as I've been kind of like doing prep for the episode and all of that too. It's just really stunning. So I definitely recommend giving this a watch. I know it's streaming right now on Max, as is the Zone of Interest, oddly enough. So you can give yourself a Jonathan Glazer, kind of double bill there, and both films, pack a wallop. So, don't prepare yourself for easy viewing by any stretch of the imagination because it will not be easy viewing. But I am just so impressed with how this film, I think, continues to speak in such different ways each time I view it. I think it speaks to just a really great piece of art, but something that is really profound and that you could feel that Jonathan really spent some time trying to figure out what he wanted the approach to be, how he wanted to handle certain kind of nuances with the character that he was really putting at the center, and certain changes that were made, and by certain changes, lots of changes. Like I said, this is a very loose adaptation of the book, which I think both grants freedom but also probably created a lot of work with opportunity in that. How do I want to take this bare bones idea of a plot of this alien coming to Earth and trying to find some empathy or learn about humanity and discover empathy through this process? And then what are the 1,000 different things that we can connect to this experience and truly make something that's really beautiful but haunting? And just absolutely love it. I highly recommend checking it out if you haven't. It's on Max. Jonathan Glazer on the mind and on the tongue of folks now off of that Oscar win, I think for more than just the win, unfortunately. If you've been following any of that news, I don't like to get political. I try to stay away from kind of political things because that doesn't really seem to fit. Not that I don't want to talk about politics. I live in DC, I work in DC, so that's kind of part of what I do. But there isn't always the greatest way to connect those pieces. And so Jonathan gave a pretty succinct, but I think important speech when he accepted his award for Best Director for The Zone of Interest. If you didn't catch the speech, you can find it, I'm sure, both a transcript or I'm sure there's video. But it's hard not to have that in mind as you were watching, as I was watching this for this record. And I don't know, I have such a deep respect for the work that Glazer has put out there. I love the thoughtfulness and the deft touch that he puts on his projects. His projects are just very special things that have so much to say. And they have so much to say because they seem almost deceptively simple from a story perspective. Like, it's very easy to describe in a couple of sentences what, you know, Under the Skin or even Birth or The Zone of Interest are about, because they're just very concentrated stories. It's the flourishes, it's the thought and the layers, the texture that he brings to the projects that make them, I think, just so unique and all worth a watch. So yeah, you know, Zone of Interest and Under the Skin are both streaming. I don't know if Birth is streaming on HBO Max, but you know, definitely queue yourself up for some goodness if you haven't seen his films. Also, again, he does some commercial work. Just had that ad with Scarlett Johansson. So, just, I don't know. Lots of cool things. So, yeah, I'll be there and ready to go for anything that Jonathan Glazer puts out. Adam Pearson's next film, I'm there. So, that's kind of where I think I'll leave it for Under the Skin. Again, just an interesting film to discuss, and I hope that this isn't too kind of all over the place, but I think if you are kind of versed with the film, you kind of understand that it's a complicated one to explore. With that said, thank you as always for listening. It means so much. I've loved getting feedback from folks. And whether it be on social media or via email, it really means a lot to hear from you and, you know, have you guys chime in on what you thought of a movie or what you thought about a certain episode. I love that kind of feedback, and it is all heartily welcomed. So if you want to shout out, say hi, share your thoughts about Under the Skin, which will probably be a little bit more cohesive than mine. Or you want to give, some suggestions for future episodes. I love that. You can reach out to me on Twitter or X. I'm still there for the time being, but I will say that by the day, the place just gets a little bit rougher. But I am there. And I am Bodies Whore. So you can follow me. I'm on Instagram. I do like Instagram. It seems a little bit nicer sometimes. And you can find me there at Bodies of Horror Podcast. And then on Blue Sky. I need followers there. I need engagement there. And by engagement, I mean I need to engage more there. I need to post more. I need to do stuff there. So if you're there, if you're posting things, follow me, say hey. I love that and would love to mix it up. And I am there at Bodies of Horror. So yeah, that's where you can find me. You can also shoot me an email, go old school. It feels weird calling email old school because I am of an age that recalls not having email. So you can shoot me an email at bodiesofhorror@gmail.com. Say hey, like I said, drop your thoughts and feelings on the film, on episodes, suggestions for upcoming episodes, all of that so welcome. Really, really appreciate it. Of course, a huge shout out and thank you to Anatomy of a Scream and the Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad for being the heart and the home of Bodies of Horror. I just feel so loved and welcomed by the group, and to be part of such an astounding group of podcasters and content makers just it floors me all the time. They are doing so many wonderful things. So I know I say this on the regular. If you haven't subscribed to the Anatomy of a Scream feed, please do. There's really phenomenal shows. And we're talking a really diverse range of shows. So you're going to find something to your liking for sure. So please subscribe if you're not already. I don't know how you're here unless you followed a link from somewhere and you're not subscribed. But if you're one of those folks and you come upon this from a link and you have no other connection to Anatomy of a Scream, please hit subscribe. Also, review and rate. Those things are really, really great for not only letting folks know about Bodies of Horror, but the other shows here on the feed. I know it can be a little bit of an ask to take those few minutes to do that, but if you do, you know, have a few moments to spare after listening to this, rate, review, so appreciated. Yeah, so until next time, folks.
Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad.